Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
I'm ready to blow with just one more sound.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbifn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Hello there, listeners, and my guest, Judy, Dr. Judy Morgan, DVM. This is really interesting. She is a veterinarian, and she has all sorts of tips to keep your pet healthy. And she was just telling me she's gone through a brain injury herself. So I'm going to ask her to talk about that later. But first, we'll talk about her. Dr. Judy Morgan, DVM, has a passion for healing the patients with whole foods, minimizing medications and chemicals, allowing the body to heal from within. Sounds just like me in chiropractic. She is a nationally renowned author and veterinarian certified in acupuncture, food therapy, and chiropractic care for dogs, cats, and horses. She explained how to use traditional Chinese medicine food therapy to keep your pets naturally healthy. Sounds good to me. We and our pets can all use that. Judy Morgan offers some tips for both you and your pet in stressful times, like this last year maybe. It's amazing. Tips for caring for your animal are very similar to those that care for you, the owner. Create as much routine as possible. That is good for the pets and it's good for us, the owner. Because regular meal times, potty breaks, and playtime can help both you and your pet settle in for naps when you really need to have quiet time. You both need regular exercise and water. A walk can help diffuse some energy and give you time to focus while working. This ties into the idea that we all need occasional breaks. People, pets, whatever. A few minutes of play will assure everyone is ready to get back to work and napping, them and you. Teach your pet to practice good behavior consistently by rewarding only good conduct. And don't neglect purchasing some new toys or treats for the animal to play with or munch on. We all like treats. There's no denying that. Aside from exercising and eating, sleep is essential. Either during the night or napping nearby you during the day, a comfy bed is crucial. If you desperately need peace and quiet for an important project, phone a friend and arrange a play date. A little social interaction can be good for everyone. Also, use touch. Everyone relates to touch. It's important, can never be underestimated for your pets or for you. All deserve better. So, I'm going to start out, Judy, and would you like to tell us a little summary of your practice and what you do?
Well, thank you for the invitation to be on tonight. I really appreciate it. I am what is considered an integrated veterinarian, meaning that I practice traditional Western medicine along with alternative therapies. And my alternative therapies include things like chiropractic care, food therapy, acupuncture, chiropractic, herbal therapy, laser therapy. So we incorporate a lot of things. We use CBD, we use flower essences, a lot of different things to combine with our traditional medicine to give us more tools in our toolbox to treat the animals. And so when I look at a patient, I don't see an animal that has, you know, kidney failure or diabetes. I see an animal that has maybe an imbalance in the body, an endocrine problem, and I look at all the different things that go into contributing to what caused the problem as well as how we're going to heal the problem. Healing the problem is going to include what's in their environment, what's in their diet, what's their mental status, what's their exercise routine, all the different things that go into it, and not only how the animal is reacting, but what is the owner capable of. For instance, my mother is 84 years old. She weighs 100 pounds soaking wet. She had a 50-pound, 17-year-old standard schnauzer. And the dog at 17 was pretty arthritic, but she was 50 pounds, so she was half my mother's body weight. And so when we looked at that dog, the dog needed help getting up. The dog needed help doing steps. The dog needed help with really everything. And so my mother is clearly not capable of lifting a 50-pound dog, although she's pretty darn capable. So we had to look at what could my mother handle, what could the dog do. So we put a ramp up the three steps that went out the door so that the dog could get in and out. We got a front and back lift harness for the dog that my mother could hold onto the handles and help the dog. We got booties for the dog that had rubber grips on the bottom. So a lot of different things that we had to look at, not just for the pet, but also for the owner so that we could keep them together and happy and helping each other for as long as possible. So it's a lot that goes into really looking at everything holistically, which means looking at the whole and not just focusing in on, okay, that dog's got arthritis, I'll give it some pain meds. No, we have to look at how are we going to modify the environment for the owner and the dog. So a lot of things that go into it. So that's really what my practice revolved around.
Very nice. So how did you become interested in this type of animal treatment?
It was an accident. I went to veterinary school in the early 1980s. I went to the University of Illinois, so Midwest United States, very traditional. We didn't learn anything alternative at all. And so when I graduated veterinary school, I pretty much had that traditional medicine focus. And about 8 years into practice, I was doing what is called relief work, which I was sort of the substitute veterinarian. So when somebody was on vacation or somebody needed an extra pair of hands, I would go in and work in the practice. And one of the practices I was working in was close to my hometown where I grew up, and a practice came up for sale in the area. And so I went to the person I was working for, and I said, hey, I'm looking at buying this practice, but I feel really bad ethically buying something 5 miles away from where I've been working. Like, that doesn't sit right with me. So we ended up buying it together and we became partners. But the practice that we bought, weirdly enough, was owned by a holistic veterinarian, and he practiced homeopathy. I didn't know anything about that at the time, and we used to joke and say that, oh my gosh, we bought this practice where they practiced, you know, voodoo and black magic, and we didn't know anything about it. So clients were coming in looking for that more holistic thing, and we really knew nothing. So I sort of accidentally took a chiropractic course. It was advertised as something called veterinary orthopedic manipulation. I thought I was going to be helping our orthopedic patients. I had no idea that it was chiropractic. I went to the course, and a couple of hours in, I kind of looked around the room and went, I think I'm in the wrong place. And we had paid for it, so I stuck it out. And when I came back from the course, I started using it in the practice, and it was like a light bulb went on, and I suddenly had this tool that literally was amazing. I was helping patients. And then, of course, I had the guilt of, if I had known this 5 years earlier, I could have helped all those other patients that couldn't walk and had back problems. And so then I had to go through the whole, wow, I wish I had done this earlier. But once I did that and it started helping so many patients, I thought, well, you know what? If this one modality, if this chiropractic added that much to my practice, what else is out there? So I went a little bit nuts and I started studying everything from homeopathy to Chinese medicine, acupuncture, raindrop therapy, music therapy, color therapy, essential oils, you name it, I dabbled in it. So it became a little bit overwhelming. I was like, I cannot read this many books. I can't take this many courses. I can't suck up this much information. And so I had to look at what really spoke to me, and what I really loved was the traditional Chinese medicine, which encompasses acupuncture, herbal therapy, food therapy, and something called Tui Na, which is sort of a combination massage and chiropractic. So those modalities just kind of lit me on fire. And I said, okay, the rest of the stuff, it was great to dabble in. It was great to get some information on it, but that's not what I want to do. This is what I want to incorporate. So between the chiropractic, the traditional Chinese medicine, and the traditional Western medicine, it gave me a really good combination that I could offer.
Great. That's really neat. Yeah.
So it was a little weird. I sort of fell into it. And my business partner, after I had been doing this for a couple of years, he said, I don't know what it is about that building that we bought, but it seems to bring about the voodoo black magic thing. And he didn't believe in any of it. He thought I was a little bit nuts. So he said, you know, might be time to part ways, and you want to buy me out. So I bought him out, and it made it much easier, because then I had 100% say in what we were going to do. And we parted on very good terms. It was a good thing. And the funny thing is, for the next 25 years in practice, we practiced 5.5 miles apart, and his practice remained very traditional, and mine was this integrated practice. And a lot of clients would come from his practice down to mine saying, hey, I heard you guys are doing some really awesome things down here. I want to know more about this. So it worked out well for both of us. But the integrating the medicine really was a much better way to go.
Good. I love to hear that, because I took a possibly the same type of course. It was in the probably 80s or 90s of veterinary orthopedic manipulation for animals.
Mm-hmm.
And I work on a lot of horses then.
Mm-hmm.
Our friends' horses and dogs and stuff. And they knew that they'd been worked on, and they remembered you. I mean, like 5 years later, these horses remembered me.
Yeah, the great thing about animals with chiropractic, acupuncture, any kind of energy healing or manipulation, they can't fake it. Either they're limping when you start and they're not limping when you finish, or they're sound asleep when you finish. They're not faking it. With people, there is a little bit of a placebo effect. Yeah, I think I feel better. Yeah, you know, you worked on me. I think I feel better. With animals, either they do or they don't. There's no guessing. And it's funny, when I started doing the chiropractic, I did a lot of horse work at the beginning. And I'll never forget we used to have this prescribed therapy at the beginning, where kind of like human chiropractic, where they say, okay, we'll see you 3 times a week for the next 3 weeks, and then maybe we'll go to once a week. You sort of have this prescribed thought process of this is how often we're going to see a patient. And when I first started doing the chiropractic on the animals, we kind of had the same thing where I'd say, okay, well, I'll come back in a week and then maybe we can stretch it to 2 weeks and then 3 weeks. And animals are much better. They hold their adjustments longer than people. So I did this one horse. This horse was the three-legged lame, and these people called me out. They had never had any chiropractic work done before, so they were a little skeptical. I didn't know anything about them. Went out, worked on their horse, and I said, okay, I'm to the point now where I'm not going to tell you that I have to see you again in a week, but you'll know. You'll know when your horse is feeling better and when he's not doing so well. Call me when you think he needs his next adjustment. Well, I never heard anything. And so I just assumed that it hadn't worked, that they were disappointed, because what do we do? We're all critical of ourselves. And I just said, oh, you know, it was a failure. It didn't work. And about 9 months later, I got a phone call from these people. And they said, can you come back out? And I said, well, I haven't heard from you for 9 months. What's up with that? And they said, oh, no, the horse was great right after you left, and he's been great for 9 months. He's limping again now.
Yep.
So, yeah, animals are great.
And animals don't have a lot of preconceived notions.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's very satisfying.
So the horse didn't read the book of, I need her back next week. The horse said, I'm good. Good to go.
Yeah. Good stuff. So since this is a brain injury program, I want to find out about your experience with brain injury.
I was going to be on this show, so the other night I was sort of going through it in my mind, and I thought, boy, this is like PTSD. Do I really want to relive this entire event? But it was almost 2 years ago. It was August 23rd of 2019. And it scares me that I can remember the date, because I can't remember dates for anything. I couldn't remember my husband's birthday for the first 10 years we were together. So the fact that I can remember this date, that's scary. But it obviously made a big impact. We were in Las Vegas for a pet show for Super Pets Expo. And I love hot weather. So we had been on the show floor for a couple of days, and we had a beautiful hot afternoon where we could have a little time off. And I looked at my husband and I said, we're heading for the pool, honey. So we went out to the pool. It was 107 degrees.
So wow.
I'm sweating by the pool. I'm having a good time. We were only probably out there for an hour. And, of course, what did I have while I was at the pool? Oh, I had an alcoholic beverage. And So then we went back up to the room. We had dinner arrangements with friends. We went to a vodka bar. It was the coolest thing in the world, and I love a good vodka martini. So we went to the vodka bar, had a couple vodka martinis, and had a wonderful dinner. And then somebody had the bright idea of, let's go to the bar on the top floor overlooking the city and have one last drink. Okay, fine. No problem. So we went upstairs, and a little before midnight, my husband came back from the bar with a drink, and I just looked at him, and I had this funny feeling, and I said, honey, something feels funny. I don't feel right. And he said, okay, we should go back to the room. And he turned away from me to tell our friends that we were going to go back to the room, and the minute he turned his back, my body went rigid, and I literally passed out standing up with my body rigid, and I fell back like a telephone pole.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I was already unconscious, when I fell back, I didn't get my hands out or anything, and what caught me was the back of my head on a concrete floor.
Ow.
And so, yeah. So clearly I was unconscious, and I remember sort of trying to wake up and stand up and just people around me saying, no, stay down, stay down. And sort of remember EMTs, sort of remember the ambulance. All I kept saying was, where's Hugh? That's my husband's name. I just kept saying, where's Hugh? Where's Hugh? And they would answer, and of course I would repeat the same thing. And then woke up in the ER, I don't know how much longer, later, when someone was running down the hall and said, skull fracture in six. And my husband just went, well, you're six. And I went, Okay. So over the next 24 hours, I dealt with this injury, had CT scans, whatever. And in reading about it later, I realized how lucky I am to be alive, because 25% of the people that have the fracture where I had it on the back of my head die. Whoa. And most people have subdural hematomas and have to have surgery, have to have pressure released. I was incredibly lucky. I did not have a subdural hematoma. I clearly did not die. And my side effects that were left over long term are something that is very easy to deal with versus what I could have been left with.
So
it's one of those things where I look at it and say, well, clearly my mission here is not finished, because I'm still here and I still have a lot of work to do. The weirdest thing that happened was I lost my sense of taste and smell. So when this whole COVID thing came out and everybody was saying, oh, well, if you get COVID, you'll lose your sense of taste and smell, I was like, well, okay. Won't know what that is. And it has come back over the almost 2 years, but it's come back weird. So sugar is horrible. I hate sugar. And I was never a huge sugar addict, but I hate sugar, which is, for most people would say, wow, that's like a good problem to have, because I don't eat sweets. I don't eat desserts. But like sweet fruits taste very funny to me. Things are kind of metallic. Things that I used to love taste really weird to me. So that's a little bit weird. And my sense of smell is not as good as it used to be. Like, I used to be able to smell cat urine from 10 miles away. And now if one of my cats pees somewhere, I can't find it, which really makes me mad. so those are – that's a very minor thing to have to put up with. I've sort of had to retrain my taste. The things that are more difficult for me, I am a math brain. And so people in my office, when we would have to do calculations for fluid therapy or drug dosages or anything like that, my brain was just an instant calculator, and the instant calculator disappeared. So I have to actually use a calculator, and I have to actually think about math now.
No.
It's just frustrating. And again, not a horrible side effect, because clearly I can use a calculator, so it's fine. So it's frustrating when you're like, I used to be able to do that. I can't stand on ladders and steps. So we just moved recently and we're building a new house and everything is on one level, because I can't do stairs. Make me very off balance, and I can't look up. So the house that we're in right now, our garage door opener button is up over my head. Reaching up to that button and having to stand on a step at the same time is almost my worst nightmare. Because I'm afraid I'm going to fall off that step and I can't find the stupid button. So in building the house, I looked at my husband and I said, where's our garage door opener? Like, I need that down at chest level. I can't look up. He actually had to have them move the garage door opener button down. Just stupid little things like that. Just, and you don't, it's the stuff that you don't think about until it happens, and you're like, and it seems like such a nothing, such a dumb thing, but even to stand on a stepladder and change a light bulb, that's like frightening to me.
Call your husband.
And it never used
that.
To be. Exactly. I'm like, honey,
yeah.
You're in charge of light bulbs. You're in charge of anything over my head, and I'm not very tall, so that's a lot of stuff.
I see. So
you know, all in all, it could have been much worse. So I'm very happy. But it is.
How does that impact on your practice and the way your relationship you have with animals?
It hasn't been huge. you know, other than doing calculations and stuff. But for instance, I don't do horse chiropractic anymore. But if I had to do horse chiropractic, I used to have to stand on either ladders or hay bales or fence posts, something to get me up above their back. I would not be able to do that anymore. So luckily I don't do that anymore, but I would not be able to if I wanted to. So so that's a little more difficult for me. So I used to ride horses all the time, and I don't ride anymore. My daughter invited me about a month ago, and I said, honey, I don't want to go. My balance is not what it used to be. And, you know, if the horse zigs, I'm going to zag. It's not going to go well. So I'm very happy being on the ground around them, but I don't have the desire to be on top anymore. So you know, working with the small animals, it hasn't been that bad. I think that maybe I understand the senior pets a little bit more, those who are having a little more trouble navigating, those who are cognitively challenged. Maybe I understand them a little better now.
Yes, the breaks were given, right? Yes.
Exactly. So, I retired. I sold my practices and retired from clinical practice in November of 2020. So for the past 6 months, I have not been in clinical practice. Now I do online consultations, mostly for food therapy, supplements, designing diets for animals that are having issues, whether it's, you know, kidney problems, liver problems, heart problems, whatever. So more of my focus now is educational. I am writing two more books at the moment. I've got four out already, but I'm in the process of writing two more, plus two workbooks to go with one of them. Lots of stuff going on. I do online courses, a lot of blogging, just a lot of writing in general. So my focus at this point is really to reach more of a mass audience, because while practice was wonderful, I could in a very busy day, I might be able to impact 15 to 20 pet owners and their pets by doing social media, books, online courses. I can impact thousands at a time. So that's really kind of the focus for the next 5 years or so anyway.
Okay. Well, now would be a good time to ask you, tell us about the books you've written and where people can get copies.
Okay. So my first book came out in 2014, but still very, very relevant. It's called Needles to Natural, Learning Holistic Pet Healing. It's a little bit autobiographical. It starts out with my journey from traditional medicine into holistic medicine, and then has chapters on all the different diseases and problems that our pets get along the line. Talks about how they're diagnosed from a traditional standpoint and how they're treated traditionally versus holistically and how you combine them. That's available on Amazon and also on my website, drjudymorgan.com. My second book, I had a co-author. It's called What's for Dinner, Dexter? It's a recipe book for dogs. I don't push that one as much anymore because I came out with one that I think is a lot better. My third book was Canine Kitchen Capers, which is a humorous look at cooking for spouses and pets. And that one, after I wrote my first couple of books, and I came out with a recipe called Pup Loaf, which has become an international sensation. It's kind of hysterical to me. I did not set out to be internationally known. I wrote the first book because people asked me to write down some of my thoughts on holistic healing, and I figured I would sell 500 copies to my friends and that would be that, but it became a lot more than that. so once people started cooking for their pets, they started sending me these funny stories and posting these funny stories on social media about how they would do all this work for 3 days making these meals for their pets and stuffing the freezer with food for the next month, and yet they forgot to feed their family for the 3 days that they were working on that. So the Canine Kitchen Capers is a bunch of recipes, but it's funny, funny, funny stories. So if you need a good laugh, but you also need some recipes for both you and your pets, Canine Kitchen Capers is really fun. And then I came out with a serious cookbook, which is Yin and Yang Nutrition for Dogs, Maximizing Health with Whole Food, Not Drugs. And that has it uses traditional Chinese veterinary medicine food therapy, using foods specifically to treat different diseases. So there's a chapter on treating liver disease, treating heart disease, treating kidney disease, cancer, weight loss, endocrine disease. So all the different problems that our animals see, and then you can use these specific recipes to help heal them and make them better and keep them with you longer. And that book came out, oh man, it might be 3 years old. I think it came out in December of 18, so 2.5. And that one really has become an international sensation. It has stayed in its number one slot on Amazon for almost the entire 3 years. It's very, very popular because the recipes are doing a really good job helping animals with all these different problems. So, which I'm so happy, because that was the goal of the book. It used to be when I would do consultations for people, I would be online with them or on the phone with them. We'd go through all the problems that their animal was having, and then I would have to design a diet. Now with the book, I can say, okay, use the diets on page 151, 157, and 159. That's, you know, it's so much easier.
Very nice. Yeah.
So yeah, all the books are on Amazon, but they're also on my website, drjudymorgan.com. But my website is, our company is called Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets. And our goal is to find natural, holistic products that you can use on your pets to minimize the chemicals, because the chemicals are the chemicals are killing us. They're killing our pets. The national statistic right now is that for any dog who lives more than 10 years, 1.6 out of every 2 will develop cancer. That's a horrible statistic. That's more than 3/4 of them that live to 10 are going to develop cancer. Doesn't mean they're going to die of cancer, but they're going to develop cancer. And in the 1970s, the average life expectancy for a golden retriever was 17. Now the average life expectancy is 10. We've almost cut them in half. Yeah, we've almost cut them in half, and people think that that is normal. Somebody was on a social media post the other day, and they were like, I feed my dog blah, 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 and he's just fine. He's lived to be 13. That's a ripe old age. And I said, you know what the saddest part of that is? You think 13 is a ripe old age. My dogs live to be 18 and 19. My cats live to be 20 and 21. Yeah. And there are people getting their animals to live well into their mid-20s. Why do we accept 10 to 12 or 13 as a ripe old age? It's not. So we need to be doing better. We need to be looking at how we can decrease those chemicals, how we can feed them real food, human-grade food, instead of waste products from the pet industry. So my website has, we're probably close to 300 products on there. Some are my own brand label, but we also find companies that align with our philosophy, and we carry their products. So basically anything that's on our website, we have tested it on ourselves. We've tested it on our animals. We just brought in a new soap and shampoo line that literally has, it labeled for dogs and cats. Actually, the cocoa therapy products that are on our website, they're all labeled for animals, except they're all the same things that we in our household, and it's the same shampoos that we use on the people in our household. So when we find things, it has to be good enough for me in order to be good enough for my dogs and cats.
Okay, that's a good test. Yeah. Good. So, what pets, do you have any particular pets, that type of pet that responds well to your therapy?
Oh my gosh, they all do. Horses are probably the most responsive when we're doing chiropractic and acupuncture. They just melt like butter. They're really amazing. Cats are pretty good too. If you can get cats to kind of put up with the whole idea of getting acupuncture or chiropractic, once they have a treatment, then they just melt when they come back for the follow-up treatments. So they just kind of curl up in a little ball and go, okay, this is wonderful. Usually when we're doing acupuncture on an animal, we like to let the needles stay in place for at least 15 minutes, sometimes a half an hour, depending on what we're doing. And we used to joke around about it because a lot of my clients are, high-end business owners, type A personalities that are running here and there and everywhere all the time. And so they would come in with their animal, and we would get them all set up on a big blanket on the floor, and we'd get the needles in, and then we'd say, okay, well, you're going to have to sit here with your animal, and we'd put on some quiet music, and, he's got lavender diffusing and whatever. And it's like, okay, well, you have to sit here with them. And the clients would say, this is the only time I sat still all week, and it's just so relaxing for them. So I used to say it was, the owner-pet bonding time. It's like, okay, I'm just going to leave you guys here in the dark and the quiet for a little while. You just enjoy this.
Very nice. Very nice. I used to
go get acupuncture, and that was the part that I loved the most. It's like, oh, they're going to turn the lights down, they're going to put the heat lamps on, and the music is playing, or the trickling water, or whatever. It's like, oh, I know I have 30 minutes of just zen.
Yes. So when I've worked on some animals, like you said, horses and cats are the animals that related best to me, but they just immediately, they knew I was coming, and they'd come tearing around the house, in the house or outside for horses. They were so excited when I came by, even if they were scared to death the first time I approached them.
Right. No, they really enjoy it.
Yeah.
So I just rescued 5 donkeys from the kill pen, and I have not tried. They're very skittish, very scared. They hadn't been handled, and some had never been handled, and some had been abused. And I haven't tried doing any therapies on them yet. Right now, we're still bribing them with carrots and food just to get close to them. So it'll be interesting when we get around to being able to actually do some more work with them.
Yeah, that's neat. So, tell me something. Once you make a change for a pet in their diet, are they interested at all in the old food they were eating, or are they much more interested in the new food?
I guess it depends on the pet, because some of them are, particularly dogs, they're extremely food motivated. My dogs have an incredible diet. They eat all human grade, homemade, or I have a couple of companies that I approve their food that I'll feed. But they are pigs, and I think if I offered them anything, they would eat pretty much anything. they definitely thrive on what they're eating. The cats are kind of funny. Cats are obligate carnivores. They really do need to be on a meat-based diet. And my younger, actually the three cats that I have right now, I delivered them. I spayed their mothers and delivered them. They were full term. So I kept the kittens, and so they were raised on raw food from the very beginning. So they have been meatosauruses from day one, which is really how we should raise our cats. However, if I put dry kibble, I don't have any dry kibble in my house. It's the worst thing we can feed our pets. But if my cats get dry kibble from somewhere, anywhere, they eat it like kitty crack. They think it is the best thing ever. And the reasons for that is that dry kibble is sprayed with fats to make it's a palatability issue. So they spray it with fats to make it very tasty and enticing for the animals. So my cats, if they ever get a chance to get dry kibble, and they used to, this house, they haven't been going outside. At our old house, they could go outside, and one of the neighbors put out dry kibble for the cats.
Oh, no.
And they would go charging over there to eat it. One of my cats, all of a sudden, I was like, what happened? You gained like 5 pounds. And it was because he figured out where the kitty crack was. But it's so bad for them. It's a horrible food for them. They're not offered it here, but if they get the chance, oh yes, they will chow down. They will snarf it down without chewing. Usually they vomit it back up. It's horrible. For instance, we've brought animals in that come in with horrible skin conditions, horrible GI problems, bladder stones, you name it. We get them cleaned up, get them on a good diet, get everything back to normal. But if you were to offer them the old food that they used to eat that made them so sick, they'll eat it and they'll instantly become sick again. Animals are not very picky about food usually, sadly.
Okay.
Although I will say, our dogs, they're pretty funny because they're raw-fed dogs, and we used to do a lot of parades. We had a big float, a wagon that we would pull, and we would put together different floats for different parades in the different towns around our practices, 4th of July, Memorial Day, whatever. And the politicians would always come by and they would want to hand out biscuits, dog biscuits, to the dogs. Our dogs would never, ever take them. Never take. And I was just like, oh, you guys are the best dogs in the world. I've trained you so well.
Oh, no.
The politicians were always, they're like, I don't understand. All the other dogs love our biscuits. And I'm like, I don't know. But they would never take them. So I don't know. Maybe they do have more brains than I give them credit for. But, they would never take the biscuits from the politicians. So that was a good thing.
That's funny. That's great, yeah.
So, but at our house, they only get human grade food, and even all of their treats are either fruits or vegetables or dehydrated meats. It's always real food, dehydrated fish, that sort of thing. That's what we feed for our guys. And they're phenomenally healthy. That's why they're living so long. So we're very happy with that.
So tell me something. Can cats eat fruit and vegetables? I know you have to feed them meat, but a lot of people would be telling me that they feed their cats this and that. And I don't know much about cat physiology.
They can eat fruits and vegetables. A good diet for cats is going to be about 90% meat, meat, bone, and organ, or meat and organ.
Yeah.
So like liver, heart, that sort of thing. So the diets that I feed my cats are anywhere from 4 to 12% fruits and veggies. and the rest is meat, bone, and organ because they're raw fed. So cats can eat it. For instance, if you look at dry kibble, that only has about 25% meat in it. So can cats survive? Yeah. So any dry kibble for cats or dogs, about the most meat that it can have in it is 25, maybe 28%, because it won't stick together in a kibble. So all the rest of that is fillers. It's either going to be grains or peas or potatoes. It's going to be something to stick it together in the kibble. So they're very high in carbohydrates, which is why when you have cats and a lot of dogs that are fed only kibble, they get obese, they have a lot of arthritis, they have a lot of inflammatory problems because the carbohydrates break down to sugars. And we know even from the human side, sugars cause inflammation in the body. So for kitty cats, that ends up with a lot of them being obese, a lot of them becoming diabetic, a lot of them having pancreatitis, arthritis. They have a lot of kidney problems because they're basically running around in a state of dehydration. Cats are not big drinkers and they cannot drink enough to rehydrate that dry food that only has about 6% moisture versus if they ate a mouse, which is 75 to 80% moisture. So when you look at those moisture differences and then you take a cat that drinks maybe once a day, so I never see my cats drink because they are on very high moisture diets. They don't sit at the water bowl. If you're seeing your cats hanging out at the water bowl, it's because they're in a constant state of dehydration because they're not eating the right food. Even my dogs, they drink very little because they're on a very high moisture diet. And it's kind of funny when I have clients that I talk them into ditching the kibble and switching over to a home-prepared diet or a raw diet or a gently cooked diet, even if it's something that your purchase already made, they're switching from this diet that is 4 to 6% moisture to something that is 70 to 80% moisture. Wow. And then I get these panicked emails, oh, my gosh, my dog's not drinking any water. He's going to die. He's not drinking. And I'm like, no, he's getting his moisture. He's fine.
Oh, no. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, it's like we don't even think about that. Most people don't think about that. Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
So especially, you know, in the summer, we expect our dogs to be drinking a lot. And my guys, they're in air conditioning most of the time, but they don't drink very much. Sometimes I wish they drink more on a really hot day, but they're getting plenty in their food. So if you have an animal that is being fed a dry kibble and they're just drinking all the time, if you switch that diet out, and people will say to me, well, I add water to his food. Well, I did the math one time before the brain injury. And it was a ridiculous amount of water. It was something like you have to add 2 gallons of water to every cup of dry kibble to get it back up to the moisture level that it was before it got made.
Wow.
And so if you're going to put 2 gallons of water in the bowl with a cup of kibble, yeah, your dog can't drink that much. I mean, it's a ridiculous
amount. Wow.
So just adding water to the food isn't going to do the job. We really need to be feeding them what they're meant to eat, which is, I mean, think about what a dog or a cat would eat in the wild. They'd catch a rabbit, they'd catch a mouse, a bigger dog might take down a deer or something, but it's going to be a lot of moisture and it's going to be mostly meat. There's the vegetable matter that they would get would be the stomach contents of the prey. So I'm not saying that our dogs are still built like wild dogs are because their digestive tracts have changed as they've become domesticated, but it's similar enough in that they really don't want to survive on a diet of corn and peas.
Very interesting. Huh. Yeah. Very, very interesting because you don't really people think, yeah, I put water in the cat's food, but like, do you know how much they need? Do you drink that much water? I mean, most people don't drink enough water.
Exactly.
You know?
Right. So if I forget what it is for people, but it's something like you're supposed to drink 1 ounce for every pound of body weight that you are. I don't even come close. And that's with us eating a high moisture diet, because we're not eating a dry kibble diet either.
Yeah.
And that's another big fallacy. And I love to use this analogy. And I actually took a box of cereal to a printer, and I said, I want you to print out this box of cereal and make this box for me. And it's my human grade kibble box of cereal. And it basically says 100% nutritious and complete, you know, organic, whole food, whatever. But if you took your child to the pediatrician and the pediatrician said, look, here's this box of dry cereal. It's got all the vitamins and minerals your child needs for the entire day. I want you to put a bowl full of this in front of your child twice a day. Have them eat it. That's all they ever need. Don't ever change it. You'll screw it up if you change it. Don't feed them anything else. This is all they get. We would look at the pediatrician like they were the craziest person in the world. Yet that's what we're told by pet food companies. That's what we're told by traditional veterinarians.
Yeah.
Just get that dry bag of food, dump it in the bowl twice a day. God forbid you would give them any table food because you'll screw up their nutrition. That's the biggest myth ever propagated by the pet food industry.
Really?
So, yeah, feed them whole food.
Wow, that's amazing. So does it affect their sleep time, for example, eating the dry kibble as opposed to the real food?
I think they sleep more when they – I think they have less energy when they eat just dry kibble. You know, it's carbs. They're breaking down the sugars. So think about if we were eating – something that's high in sugar all the time. Basically, what you end up with is this seesaw with the pancreas, which is why we end up with a lot of diabetic problems.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like you eat the candy bar and you get this sugar rush, and then your pancreas says, oh my gosh, dump insulin, get the sugar down. The sugar drops, and then you go, wow, I'm hypoglycemic. I need another candy bar. You eat another candy bar. Your sugar goes back up. Your pancreas says, let me give you more insulin. It goes back down. And we see that a lot more in cats. Like, that's the response that cats have to the high-carb diets. So when you put dry kibble in a bowl for cats, so watch them. They graze all day long. They go eat. Then they run around a little bit. They go sleep. Then they're back at the food bowl. They eat. They repeat that cycle. And so their pancreas all day long is doing this insulin dump and then low sugar, then high sugar, insulin dump, low sugar. And that's what's going on. And we get a lot of cats with chronic pancreatitis, and then their pancreas wears out, and then they're diabetic and they're obese. And the only exercise they get is back and forth to their dry kibble bowl. So we see that a lot more in cats than we do in dogs. But even like pre-choice feeding, leaving out a bowl of kibble. First of all, if I did that in my house, it would be gone in 5 minutes. There's no way it would be that day. I have a bunch of pigs. I don't know how people do that. The only thing I can think is that the dog hates the food so much that they leave it till they're like starving to death. So then they're like, okay, I'll go eat some of that dry crap that's in the bowl. That's the only way I can figure it works, because I know in my house my dogs are pigs and they would probably just eat the entire thing. Although I don't know. I don't have kibble in my house, so I don't know whether they would leave it or not. But they really are pigs. They're food motivated. And maybe they're just so food motivated because they're getting such good food. But food time twice a day at our house is the most exciting time of – you would think it was the most exciting time of their life, twice a day. They're dancing around, barking, going crazy. They can't wait to be fed. You put it on the floor in the bowl, and it's gone in 30 seconds. And It's like, wow, that was worth that 10 minutes of dancing around, because that's how long it takes me to make it. And then they're back to, okay, we're good now.
Oh, wow.
But they're pretty happy with food time. They like food time, and they're pretty funny. I don't cook for people, but I cook for – my husband cooks for people. I cook for dogs. So if I'm in the kitchen, the dogs are all in the kitchen because they know that, ooh, mom's making something for us because that's what mom does.
Very interesting.
I'm usually trying out new recipes.
Good stuff.
They're quite happy to be the taste testers.
Yes, yes. So now tell me, when you're preparing the food for the animals, did you first read up about, you know, how many proteins, how many carbs, or did you just, you know, figure, okay, they need more of this, they need more of that? I mean, how did you do your exploration of the diet business for the pets?
You know, that's a really good question. You know, when I made the original pup loaf recipe, I actually used a base mix by a big company that they have a base mix that is fruits and vegetables and the vitamins and minerals. And so then I just added things to that. So that was a really simple, basic recipe. Mm-hmm. And then I started looking at it more critically and said, well, why do I need to use a base mix when I could just do all of this myself and then I could tweak it to how I want it to be? And I think how it really started was I got in with a bunch of pet food junkies that all we do is talk about pet food, really started critically reading labels. And then started looking critically at the vitamin and mineral levels that they really need and just did a ton of reading. Then I took the Chinese medicine food therapy course, which taught me the properties of food as far as how they affect the body. So there are certain foods that we can eat that will help drain our liver. There are foods that we can eat to help decrease phlegm in the body. So phlegm, we think of like mucus and snot.
Yeah.
Not a good word, but so there are foods that will do that. There are foods that will help move qi or energy or resolve stagnation. So if we have lumps and bumps and tumors that we're trying to shrink, there are foods that we can use for that. There are foods that we can eat to help cool down the body if we have too much heat. So like women in menopause, we're hot all the time. So there are foods we can use to help cool. For people who are what I call old and cold, my mother is 84. She's in a sweater when it's 90 degrees out. I'm like, Mom, how can you not be sweating to death? Because I'm postmenopausal, but I'm still hot most of the time. And meanwhile, she's like freezing most of the time. So
yeah.
But there are foods that we can eat that will help warm the body. So I started looking at all the energetics of things, and that's how I put my recipes together. It's like, okay, well, I've got a liver that's got nodules in it. Okay, well, I need to shrink those nodules. I need to move that stagnation, and I need to support the liver. What are the things that the ingredients that I would use to put that together? And then I looked at the physiology of our animals. For instance, the cats, they should have mostly meat, bone, and organ, and maybe they can get away with 6 to 12% fruits and veggies. Okay, what fruits and veggies are going to be beneficial for what conditions? For the dogs, I go a little bit heavier on my fruits and veggies. They're probably going to be closer to 20-25%. I don't use starches for dogs or cats for the most part because I don't want that sugar buzz. I don't want that inflammation that we get from the starchy carbs. So most of my vegetables that I'm using are very, very low starch. So when I'm putting recipes together, I'm doing it from the standpoint of looking at my proportions of protein, fat, and carbohydrate, or in my case, it's more vegetable matter because it's a non-starchy carb. But and then I'm looking at the properties of the foods to determine what I want to go into a specific diet. So and it's really interesting because from a Chinese medicine standpoint, kidney failure is not a one-size-fits-all. We've got the old cold dogs whose kidneys don't work very well. We need to warm up their kidneys. We've got the old hot dogs whose kidneys don't work so well, so we need to cool off the inflammation in their kidneys. So they're opposite diets. So it's never a one-size-fits-all, which is what I think is so fun because you can tailor it for each individual.
Very nice. Very nice. So I want to hear about stress, because stress in animals, stress in people, stress is a big, huge problem for everyone in our society. So tell me some hints for animals and stress.
Okay. You know what's really interesting? I did a pet summit a few weeks ago. And I interviewed someone who is a life coach and dog trainer. And she ended up combining the two. And what she now does is she looks at animals with behavior problems. She goes into households with animals with behavior problems and figures out what's going on with the people and how that is – the people's emotions and how that's impacting their animals and how their animals are acting in response. Was the most amazing interview. For instance, she went in, there was this husband and the wife had this little poodle that just barked and growled at the husband all the time, barked and growled at anybody who came near the wife. And so after she sat and talked to them, she looked at the wife and she said, "You're using that dog to keep your husband away from you." And she broke into tears and said, "You're right." So they ended up doing some counseling, and it ended up that, you know, it was a happy ending that the husband and wife kind of worked through everything and the dog stopped barking and growling at him and then everybody was happy. But it is very true that our emotions show up in our animals all the time. So there's a lot of things that we can do. One of the big buzz things right now is CBD for pets, and it is amazing when you get the right products. And I'm going to put a plug in for naturallyhealthyhemp.com. It's a website that has CBD products for both animals and people, but they're very well researched and very high quality. For our animals, we look for natural products that can help. So CBD has been, and CBD for animals is not allowed to have any THC in it. So there's nothing hallucinogenic. Animal products are not allowed to have THC. Whereas in human products, it's a whole different ballgame. But so that's a national thing. There's no THC allowed in pet products. But CBD can be extremely helpful for these guys. We also use flower essences. So the one that most people would be most familiar with would be Rescue Remedy, which was a box flower remedy. That one is actually a combination of five different flower essences. The biggest problem that I see with Rescue Remedy is that people use it incorrectly. It is for situations of trauma. Interestingly, my daughter, when she was about 9, her pony got spooked and she went off the side of the pony, but her foot got stuck in the stirrup. The pony bolted and drug her for a couple of laps around the arena, and the stirrup finally came off the saddle when he went over a jump. And so when she finally hit the ground, I thought for sure she was dead. and I heard her let out some little squeaks, and I thought, oh, thank God she's alive. And I ran over, and I thought, you know, of course, the knee that was spinning around in the stirrup, I thought, okay, well, that ACL is torn. That leg is going to be trashed. What ended up, that leg was fine. Her other leg, when he went over the jump, he kicked her in the other knee. So, of course, I'm bending the good leg around, what I think is the good leg around, and she's screaming at me because that was the one that got kicked. But while she was laying on the ground, I grabbed what I had close by, which was Rescue Remedy and a homeopathic arnica salve. And I gave her both of those, you know, put the salve on, gave her the Rescue Remedy, loaded her up in the car, rushed her to the emergency room. And by the time we got there, she was laughing and giggling. And I said, that's the best response to Rescue Remedy that I've ever seen in my life. And that's what it's used for, is for a shock and trauma. But a lot of people want to use it for, you know, I'm going to the vet's office and my dog has anxiety. No, that's not shock and trauma. So, but there are more specific flower essences that you can use for different things. So we use a company that I love their names because they're easy to figure out. They have a combination for one called Sibling Rivalry. Okay, you got two dogs that are fighting with each other. They need Sibling Rivalry. I've used it on kids as well. There's one called Devil Be Gone for those who are lashing out and meaning to do harm to others. Okay, that's pretty self-explanatory. Mellow Out. There's Panic Attack for thunderstorms and, you know, times of panic. So we use flower essences a lot. We can also use pheromones. So there's pheromone collars, there's diffusers, there's sprays. And they're basically, there's a dog appeasing pheromone, and then there's a cat one. And basically, it's the smell that the mama would release for the babies to feel calm and mature. So we use those either in the home or, for instance, when cats would come in to the vet clinic and they were scared, we would spray a towel with the pheromones and drape that over their carrier and let them just sit there and take that in for a couple of minutes. There's CDs out that are, there's one called In a Dog's Ear, and then I think there's In a Cat's Ear. Cat music is very different from dog music. The first time I heard the cat music, I thought, how can that possibly be soothing? Because it sounds like a bunch of cats screaming on a hot tin roof. It is the strangest music, but it's very soothing to cats, weirdly. The dog music is much more mellow, but there is specific music that you can play. Lavender is very calming for most animals, so you can use a lavender spray. We have a bunch of them on our website. You can use lavender shampoos. You can use, as a matter of fact, when I used to go out to do chiropractic on horses, I had two scents that I had lavender. And I think the other one that I took was rosemary. I can't remember now. But it's interesting because I would put one, I would usually start with the lavender and put it on my hand. And if the horse really breathed it in and calmed down, it's like, okay, that's the right one. And if they don't do that, they have a huge aversion to it and they back off from it. It's like, okay, switch to the other one. I think my other one that I took was rosemary. But it's interesting because, like, for instance, a lot of people like sandalwood. I hate sandalwood, although I haven't smelled it since my brain injury, so I don't know. Might be different now. So let's see. We use CBD, flower essences. Thunder coats or anxiety wraps. Linda Tellington Jones has an anxiety wrap. T-Touch is something done by that was started by Linda Tellington Jones. It's a little bit of a massage-y type thing, but it's very specific. So there's so many things that you can do to de-stress these guys. But, you know, getting them out for some exercise. One of the things that I see very commonly, and it depends on breed of dog. We have English Toy Spaniels and Cavalier King Charles Spaniels. They're couch potatoes. They're very happy to snooze most of the day. that which is my kind of dog. You should get the kind of dog that is your kind of dog. I'm pretty chillax, so I like having a dog that is that way. But a lot of people like high energy dogs, border collies, cattle dogs, working dogs, shepherds. The problem with those dogs is that people who don't know the personality of that dog, they get that and they expect that dog to be the couch potato or to live in an apartment. Those dogs need a job. And if you don't give them a job, they will get very frustrated and you will get a lot of anxiety, frustration, aggression, acting out, separation, anxiety. There's a lot of anxiety problems. So a lot of times what I have to prescribe is a job. You know, you need to find a job for that dog. I don't care if it's scent work in the house, scent work outside, get them a flock of ducks to herd around the yard. I don't care. Find them a job.
Uh-huh. Very interesting. Yeah, okay. So some animals just naturally like to spend their time sleeping, some want to run around.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just if you get a working dog breed or a herding dog breed, that's what they're made to do. You've got to give them that outlet. You've got to give them the opportunity for that. So however you make that happen, you need to make that happen. They're high drive animals and they need to have that outlet. So what we see happen over time, if they don't have that outlet, from a Chinese medicine standpoint, it ends up being something called liver qi stagnation, which is basically frustration gets stuck in their gut, and in their liver, and it'll cause, a lot of misbehavior, a lot of acting out, a lot of destruction, just abnormal responses to stimulation.
Very interesting. So how much sleep do most, like, dogs or cats need?
Needs a good question. I think my dogs probably sleep 20 hours a day. Actually, I think my cats do too. Like I said, we're three older people living in a house with not a lot of activity. Now, when we move to the farm in a few months, we'll be outside with them a lot more. So maybe they'll be more active. I don't know. For instance, when we go camping, we do a lot more walking and hiking and we'll take them with us and they're very happy to do that. But if we don't afford them that opportunity, they're pretty happy to just snooze. So, but like I said, we have pretty low energy dogs. Most of them are older. Same with our cats. They're all older now. When my cats were going outside at our old house, they were out prowling around a lot. Much more active. House cats tend to become very sedentary because they just don't have the opportunity to do a whole lot.
Mm-hmm. So if they had the opportunity, they wouldn't sleep as much.
Exactly. And cats are naturally nocturnal. People get upset. Somebody that emailed me and she said, I just got this cat and he's keeping me up all night. Well, the previous owner used to let the cat out at night, so the cat was out running around all night chasing and hunting and doing whatever. So this person adopted the cat and kept the cat inside, and she said, this cat is up all night long knocking things off shelves, running around the house, screaming, jumping on things. She's like, I can't stand it. I said, well, you just took the cat with a learned behavior and doing natural cat things, because that's what they do at night. I mean, ours run around the house all night. I hear them. They're nocturnal. And so I said, so she wanted to drug the cat. I said, you can't drug the cat. You have a cat who's doing natural cat things, and that's what he did for the first 4 years of his life. You can't expect him to instantly adapt to what you want. So she ended up getting CBD for him, and that took the edge off, and then he was much better at night. She was like, okay, I can sleep now. Thank you.
Oh, that's funny.
I said, okay, well, you just have to retrain him to, this is the new routine. Like, you want to play all day. You'd like to sleep at night. But cats are nocturnal animals, and we forget that. And so when we hear them running around through the house in the middle of the night or screaming in the middle of the night, we're mad at them. And they're like, I'm just being a cat. I understand.
Very interesting. Yeah. I mean, I grew up with cats. I mean, I didn't really think about that. We always had cats in our house, you know, and yeah.
Well, and I mean, we also don't think about the fact that when cats are scratching our furniture, cats scratch. That's what they do. Our guys are really good. We have two really good scratching posts that they absolutely love. And you need to have scratching posts with different material on them because some cats like scratching on cardboard, some like scratching on carpet, some like scratching on leather. So you need to have different surfaces available for them and make it so that they've got their area where they're allowed to scratch. And ours, I don't like to declaw cats, and our guys all have all their weapons intact, but they're very good about using their scratching posts and leaving everything else alone. but again, it's a natural cat behavior to scratch, and we're inviting them into our world, but then expecting them to change their behaviors for us. And it's not a realistic expectation. We have to allow them to do what it is that they do. We just have to give them the outlet to do it in a manner that's not going to be offensive to us.
Right. No, I'm thinking now, that brings me to a question. The cats I grew up with were all inside cats. We, you know, my parents had them declawed.
Right.
So do declawed cats, do they like to scratch, or that's only cats what they do?
They'll still go through the motion. They're basically sharpening claws. There's no claws there. So they still go through the motion. They just don't do any damage to anything because they're declawed. And when I first had cats 35 years ago, mine were declawed as well. And then when I bought my first farm and my cats were able to go in and out, it's like, well, I can't declaw them because they're going outside. They need their defenses. And actually, the state of New Jersey is very close, if they haven't done it already, to outlawing declawing, and a lot of states are doing that. So declawing is not very popular anymore. It's not done very much.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting. So, I mean, these diseases you hear about, I mean, cats with leukemia and dogs with cancers and things, is that because of what we feed them?
I think food has a lot to do with it. I think over-vaccination has a lot to do with it. And I am 100% sure that the overuse of chemicals and pesticides is causing that. We're using a lot more immunosuppressant drugs. We have so many more animals with allergies, and we use a lot of immunosuppressant drugs that have been shown to cause cancer. We know they cause cancer, but we use them like they're candy. The pesticides that we're using for flea and tick prevention are absolutely causing, they're neurotoxins. They're causing neurologic problems. We're seeing so much more meningitis than we ever saw before, seizures. Endocrine diseases. What we're doing to our animals is a travesty, frankly.
Wow. Very interesting. Yeah, we don't have any pets in our house because our chiropractic practice is in our house, and a lot of patients react to like dog hair or whatever, pet hair. I mean, that's because of what we're feeding the cats and what we're feeding ourselves.
Well, it's both. I think we're seeing a lot more allergies in people as well. again, we don't over-vaccinate people as much as we do pets, but I think we do with people as well. I took my mom to the doctor the other day, and they were like, well, have you had this vaccine? And he listed like six different vaccinations, and I just looked at him like he had six heads, and I'm like, no. We're not getting them today either, thanks.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my goodness.
So, there's the environmental pollutants are so much higher. Our food chain is so much worse than it was when we were all, you know, growing our own organic farm-raised food.
Oh, yeah.
So there's just so many factors that go into it that and it's really hard to we're going back to homesteading. I've got this huge garden that I'm growing this year, trying to do it all organically. And every day I go out there and there's a new bug that I have to battle one of my plants. And I've learned more about insects and bugs in the past 2 months than I ever wanted to know in my entire life. And I'm trying to battle it all organically. And it is. And there are days when I just stand in the garden and I want to cry and just say, how do I see these huge fields of collards and kale that are beautiful? Oh, I know how. They're spraying them with all kinds of chemicals to kill the bugs.
Yeah.
So which is it? Do I spray the chemicals to kill the bugs so I have a beautiful crop, or do I stand there with my moth-eaten leaf of kale and go, well, that's lovely for dinner? It's so frustrating.
Yeah, that's what you just trim it up a little, and who cares? Yeah, exactly. The animals have to, the bugs have to enjoy it too, right?
Yeah, well, the bugs are enjoying, let me tell you. So far I'm sticking to my guns and we're using all natural products in the garden. Some things are doing well and some things are not doing so well, but this was our first year. This is the experiment year. So we shall see, but we raise our own chickens for eggs. None of us are brave enough to, we're not brave enough to kill the chickens for meat. So we at least eat the eggs. Yeah, I originally got the chickens so that I'd have eggs for the dogs, but it ends up we're eating most of the eggs, so dogs
eat them. Oh, well, let the dogs worry about it. Okay, I just want to break in here and say, if anyone has a question they'd like to ask Dr. Judy, please call in to this show. Tonight, while it's on live, call in 424-243-2540 and press 1. That way, because I'm sitting here in the studio, I'll know that you have a question. So if you need to ask Judy something about your pets, please. I'm sure she'd love to answer because this woman knows about bugs and pets and all sorts of things. So
I'm learning about more things than I wanted to know about.
Yeah, Randy, so you said you're moving to a new farm or you're getting a farm or something?
Yeah, we bought 23 acres a year ago. And so we built the barn first so we could move the animals in and then put in the garden, and the house should be done in another 2.5 months. It's a long haul.
I see.
Yeah, my husband's an architect, so he designed the house. This is his baby, and he literally spends 10 hours a day picking out different design features for the house, so it ought to be amazing when it's done.
that's great. Yeah, so how many pets do you personally have?
Let's see, right now we have 3 cats, 4 dogs, 12 chickens, 2 miniature horses, a pony, 2 draft horses, a draft mule, 3 donkeys, and 2 hinnies, which are a horse-donkey cross.
Oh! Wow!
Yeah, it's a little nuts. My husband's lobbying for baby goats. I haven't gotten on board with that yet. We'll see.
And did you cook for all these animals?
Well, I cook for the dogs. The cats sometimes get homemade food. I have one who really likes homemade food. The cats are really finicky. Like, people ask me all the time, why don't you write cookbooks for cats? I'm like, I'll write the book. You tell your cat to eat it. Like, I'm not responsible for the fact that your cat is going to be picky. They just are. And they don't like leftovers. So you can't cook big, like, for the dogs, I can make big batches of food and freeze it and reheat it. And cats don't like leftovers. They're not good with that stuff.
Oh.
So, yeah, they're a totally different deal. Chickens, I'm having fun getting things out of the garden for them. I just pulled out a whole bunch of mustard plants that the bugs had more fun with than I did, and it was really bitter. So I said, you know what, I grew it, and I'm not really that excited about it. So I pulled out the plants and threw them all in the chicken coop, and the chickens were going nuts over it for 2 days. Nothing goes to waste. Everything goes back to somebody.
Good stuff.
So, yeah. That's the great thing about the farm. You never let anything go to waste.
Right. Oh, that's neat. Yeah.
Any food waste goes to compost. It just, everything gets recycled.
Yeah, we pick up dirt for our garden at the local dump, you know.
Right.
Recycling plant. We just get, you know, big truckloads and haul it in and dump it. And, you know, that's what we use for our soil because we have nasty soil around here.
Yeah. Yeah, ours is all clay. We actually had to bring in loads of soil just to build the garden because it was like nothing is going to grow in this clay. So.
Yeah. Well, the horse manure works really well for gardens, too.
Well, we have lots of that.
Yeah. We had a lot of patients who used to bring us big loads of the stuff. Yeah. Yeah, for our little garden. Very nice.
Chicken manure is actually good, too. So
really?
When we clean the chicken coop, that goes into it, too. So it's just always trying to rebuild everything. But even our pastures that we have the animals out on, they were old hay fields that hadn't been fertilized and built up. They just kept taking the hay off and hadn't done anything with it for years. So even the pastures were having a company come in and fertilize multiple times a year and reseed multiple times a year, it'll take a few years to get that up to sustainable pasture for everybody. So it's a lot of work to reclaim land that hasn't been fortified for years.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yes. And when you live on a farm, you become really aware of that, what we're doing to our soils.
Exactly. And that's, you know, why I say that the food that we eat now is nothing like what we ate a century ago, because our soil is so depleted, and then there's so much chemical waste in our glyphosate is in everything.
Oh God, yeah.
And
especially people think they have a problem with wheat. You know, it's not the wheat; it's the stupid glyphosate. Yeah.
Exactly, and glyphosate is such an endocrine disruptor. So we're all running around with thyroid problems and adrenal gland problems and pituitary gland problems because we've got a chemical disruptor, endocrine disruptor, in our systems. Our animals have it too. We're seeing a lot more endocrine disease.
How do animals react to thyroid problems?
So, interestingly, dogs generally have underactive thyroid. They get something that's autoimmune thyroiditis, where basically their immune system attacks their thyroid gland, And
oh, no.
It's a fairly large percentage of dogs, actually, that by middle age, and it's more so in some breeds than others. It's more of a, I think we see more of it in larger breeds, although we see it across the board, where they're needing thyroid supplementation by middle age, an awful lot of them by late age need thyroid supplementation. Cats are the opposite. Their thyroid problems tend to be thyroid tumors, and they are hyperthyroid, so they're making too much thyroid hormone. And we think that may be diet-related. It may be related to the chemicals lining the cans in the canned food. It may have something to do with feeding too much fish-based diet. A lot of theories running around as to why cats have the hyperthyroidism. But for a large percentage of cats that live into their teens, hyperthyroidism becomes a problem. And so for the kitty cats, what we see is a ravenous appetite, hyperactivity. It's like their metabolism is revved up, really supercharged. So they're kind of crazy. And you'll have a small cat that'll eat 8 cans of food a day and still lose weight.
Wow.
So those are the hyperthyroid cats. Dogs that get hypothyroid, where their thyroid is not functioning as well, they tend to become obese. They get bald patches in their coat. They're more prone to skin infections. They're lethargic. They develop paralysis of their airway, the laryngeal paralysis. We don't see hardening of the arteries, atherosclerosis, in dogs like we do in humans, except in dogs with untreated thyroid disease. So it's a huge deal for them. And then for the dogs, we're also seeing a ton of adrenal gland disease. We see a ton of disease. Disease is at least 100,000 dogs a year are diagnosed with that. It's kind of exploded in the last few years. And I think a lot of it has to do with these endocrine disruptor chemicals that are in our food chain.
It's amazing people don't seem to realize this. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's more studies coming out, but for instance, there was a great study that came out maybe a year ago. They tested the waterways in Europe. And almost all of the waterways have the chemical fipronil in it, which is, they think it's coming from the flea and tick preventative that's put on dogs.
Wow.
And it's in all the waterways. So that means people are drinking it, bathing in it. And that's pretty sad that we're putting so many chemicals on our animals that we're affecting our waterways.
Yeah.
And a lot of these chemicals are toxic to fish and marine life. So what are we doing to them? It's a trickle-down effect.
Oh, yeah. That's truly, truly horrifying when you think about it.
Yeah, it is.
Wow.
It is. So when I see those weeds in my driveway, I'm kind of like, I'm going to have to go pull them out by hand.
yeah. My husband fired our gardeners when he realized they were using some kind of spray in our front yard on the weeds and stuff. He just got rid of them, you know. It's like, oh dear, yeah.
Well,
what's that?
Yeah, well, it's very hard to find lawn care people that are going to spray non-toxic weed control. For instance, with my vet clinics, we had to search pretty hard to find an exterminator who would come spray our clinics with something that wasn't going to be toxic. We couldn't have any toxic chemicals, yet we also couldn't have fleas or ticks or mice or
water
in the clinics. We had a lot of pet food stored there, so you know, it was, okay, we can't have all this stuff, but you can't spray anything toxic. So you can find those people, but sometimes you have to do a little bit of searching to find them.
Yeah, that's true. Because, yeah, people don't think what's next down the line. Yeah, that's why my husband doesn't want anything in our yard that might, you know, poison the birds, which the cats catch, and, you know, whatever.
Exactly.
Like, oh, dear. Yeah.
Yep. Well, good for him.
Yeah, but
good for him. Yes.
You know, like you, we also don't use any sprays or anything in our garden. So, you know, the birds, the nesting birds, you know, we had a bird's nest on the side of our house at one point on our electric box, and they just would destroy our garden, think all the food was for them, you know.
Well, I have to say, my net fencing is doing very well at keeping out squirrels and bunnies and raccoons and deer, so I'm very happy with that.
That's good.
Yeah. So I may have to net the plants away from the bugs next year.
Good luck. Yeah.
It's a process.
Wow. Okay, so, like, how much exercise does your normal average dog need?
You know, again, it's going to depend on the breed, the age, but even senior dogs, as their mobility allows, we still need to get them out. So, for instance, our dog, who lived to be 19, our Charlie, he, for the last 2 years of his life, was in a four-wheeled cart.
Oh.
And he could walk in his cart, but he couldn't stand on his own. But if we put him in his cart, he could, you know, paddle his four little legs. And
uh-huh.
So we would take him for walks even in his cart. We would just attach the leash to the cart and kind of pull him along, and he would trot along with the rest of the pack. He didn't go for long walks, but even at campgrounds, we would take him in his little cart and take him out. We have one right now who really can't walk well at all. So she goes with the rest of the pack when we go on walks. She goes in a stroller because she still needs that mental stimulation, that outdoor stimulation.
Yes.
But she has a bad heart, so we can't have her walk long distances, but she still likes to go with the pack. I would say that at least 3 or 4 times a day, they need to get out. They need to move around, whether you go out in the yard and throw the ball for them, you know, chase a stick. My dogs, their favorite game is to go out in the yard with me. I run laps and they follow me running laps. It's more fun if mom is going to run too. So it just depends. If you live in an apartment or somewhere where you don't have a fenced yard, you've got to get them out on the leash and get them out for some walks. let them have, like, I call it smell tours, but they need that mental stimulation, that environmental stimulation, as well as just moving their bodies, just the same as we do. So I think, you know, I don't know that we're actually probably better off now that a lot of us are working from home, because we probably actually do get up and maybe move around a little more during the day and take little breaks and go stretch our legs and go out in the backyard for a minute, walk out to the mailbox. Whereas if you're working in a cubicle in an office all day, you probably don't get up and move around as much. But I think we need to be really cognizant of that, even if we are working from home, or going back to the office, that you take a break every couple of hours and get up and move. One of the things in Chinese medicine that is really bad for us is stagnation. And that's, we call it qi stagnation. Qi is energy. So energy stagnation, your brain stagnates, your organs stagnate, like everything just sort of shuts down when you're sitting for a long period of time. So you need to get up and move around. And if you can, go outside, change your environment, change your position. you know, get a snack, get a glass of water, because none of us drink enough, get a glass of water and just move. It's really, really important. So if you have a dog at home, that's a great time to say, hey, that's one of the things, if I'm working from home all day and I'm on the computer all day, one of the things that will get me up and get me moving is a dog who needs to go outside. So every couple of hours, it's like, okay, I'm going to get up, I'm going to move, I'm going to get all the dogs outside, they're going to move, we're all going to move for 5 minutes, okay, now we can go back to work. but it's really important to do that.
Okay, and I want to know about the human touch or pets grooming each other. I mean, how does that play into their... physiology, what's going on?
Well, it's interesting. Cats are a little bit more solitary. But I will even see the cats groom each other occasionally. Actually, I see the cats groom the dogs, and the dogs kind of snuffle with the cats. But it's really important. Dogs are pack animals, basically. Well,
yeah.
It's funny. I just read an article about that, and they said that they're maternal pack animals. So they're in a pack when the mom has the puppies, but then they're a little – like they hunt by themselves when they're adults without the group. But anyway, it's a semantics thing. But they really are more pack animals. Like we see our dogs, they all sleep in a big pile. And actually in our house, the dogs and cats all sleep together in a big pile. And they like to be touching each other. They like to be, if we're sitting in a chair, they want to be in the chair with us. As a matter of fact, I have a cat in my lap. They like that touch. And even at the farm, watching the horses, they will pair off and they will groom each other. I was noticing in one field, today we have two draft horses, the draft mule and the pony. The draft mule is new, so she doesn't really know anybody yet. The
yeah.
two draft horses stand side by side, head to tail, almost all the time.
Huh.
And they swish flies. They swish flies for each other. So they've each got a tail in their face. They're swishing flies for each other, and they're grooming each other. Our donkeys will get, they basically wrap their necks around each other and use their teeth to scratch on the neck and along the top line of each other. And so they mutually groom each other. It's really interesting to watch the animals for those that are, and cats are generally considered more solitary, but yet if there's a lap, we've got a cat in a lap. That's how they are. They like to sleep in bed with us. They like to sleep on top of me. That touch is very important to them. So if you want to bond with your dog or your cat, sit down and start petting them, massage them. If they've got a sore spot, and they're really good at finding the sore spots on us as well. They'll gravitate toward areas where they feel like we need help. My sister is a physical therapist for people and for animals, and she uses animals to help find the problems in the people's bodies. It's really interesting. She did a study once where she came to our barn. She set up a massage table in a stall, had my daughter lay on the massage table. And this is the same kid who got drug on the pony. But we use the same pony, funny enough. Brought the pony in the stall, and we just sat and watched. And my daughter just laid on the table. And the pony went around her and kind of sniffed and sniffed and sniffed and finally stopped and rested his nose on my daughter's right hip, which happened to be the problem area where she had an issue going on. And the pony knew. The pony picked out exactly where the problem was. And animals are very, very intuitive. We don't give them near enough credit. But, when you're having a bad day, your animal is going to come to you and try to make it better. Animals take on a lot of our medical problems. It's amazing how many times people would come in and then I would diagnose their animal with something and they'd go, ugh, figures. you know, three other people in the household have that. Well, of course they do, because that's what they do. We had a dog and a cat, both had lung cancer at the same time. One was 21 and the other was 17. So I was like, all right, you know, not a big shock here. But they both had lung cancer at the same time, and I had an intuitive did a session with us, and she said, these animals are taking something on for all of you. Are all of you okay? And I said, as far as I know, we're all okay. But I actually went to the office with my husband and my mother and myself and x-rayed all of our chests because she had me nervous enough. She was like, no, these animals take on things for us. And we were all fine, but I was like, well, who knows? Maybe we weren't fine, but they took it on. So it is pretty amazing how often you'll see the same issues in households. You know, we've got kids with a million allergies, and the pets in the house also have allergies. It's like, okay. But they do. Huh. They take on a lot of it.
Very interesting. That's
so
really
when I get a household where all the animals have cancer and all the people have cancer, I just look at the people and say, you might want to check your water and you might want to move.
Oh, wow. Do they listen to you?
Well, it's amazing how many people I change the diets for their animals and then they change the diets for themselves. I had one couple, between the two of them, they lost 120 pounds, and they said, you know, we're doing all this work feeding this good food to our animals. We decided we should do it for ourselves, too. It was a great side effect. She was so happy.
Good stuff. There's things I'd like to hear. So you must have some other fun stories for your practice. We can then show you can, you know, tell me and the listeners some fun stories.
God, you know, over the years, there's just been a million. One of my favorite stories is the Seeing Eye dog. When the owner got the dog weighed 65 pounds. He was a black lab. And over the next 2 years, the dog ballooned to 130 pounds.
Whoa.
And the owner brought the dog in and he said he can't work for me anymore because he can't fit in his seeing eye harness. He can't fit in his working harness. So I can't use the dog as a seeing eye dog. And he said the seeing eye people are going to take the dog back from me unless I can get him to lose the weight. So I had him try a couple things. Dog wasn't losing the weight. And I got really frustrated with him. And he said, well, when we walk him, he picks up food, you know, that people leave and whatever. And I'm like, no, you're feeding this dog too much. So I just looked him in the eye and I said, if this dog lived with me, this dog would lose its weight. I guarantee it. And he looked at me and said, would you do that for me, Doc? I said, do what? He said, can the dog live with you? Will you help him lose the weight? And I just looked at him and said, what did I just do? So I did take the dog home and I kept the dog for 3 months. And in 3 months, I got him from 130 down to 95.
Whoa.
And then we had a hurricane and lost power for 5 days. And so I told the owner he had to take his dog back because I couldn't deal with the dog and no power and whatever. So then I told the owner that I would provide the food for his dog. And it switched him from kibble to a raw diet, which we got rid of the carbohydrates, which is how we got rid of the weight. And I said, he couldn't afford the food. And I said, I'll give you the food for free if you bring this dog in and weigh him every week. And as long as he lost weight, you get another week of food. And if he gains weight, you pay for the food. He said, okay, that's a good deal. But he and his partner couldn't walk the dog because they had enough disabilities that they couldn't do the exercise that we were doing with the dog. So he put a sign up in his building and asked for people to walk his dog. And he had dozens of people who knocked on his door and said, hey, I'll walk your dog. So all these people chipped in to help walk the dog. He brought the dog in every week, and every week the dog lost a pound or two. And so I kept giving him the free food. And the dog was back to work with his harness, and it was a great story. And then he moved to Pennsylvania, and I lost track of him. I have no idea what happened after that. But it was a great success.
Yeah.
While he was with me.
That's great to hear.
Yeah, but it was a great story because we basically got a whole community involved in helping this blind man with his seeing eye dog. So it was pretty cool.
Very nice.
Yeah, sometimes it takes a village.
That's true, yeah. Around here, there's a lot of helper dogs for anxiety.
Yeah, and they're very important.
Yeah, it's becoming more and more of a thing. I mean, I've noticed that.
Yep. Well, they're very important. I think people have more anxiety as part of the problem.
Yeah. Oh, well. So you also say in your intro that it's good to, you know, occasionally buy new toys or treats for the animals.
Mm-hmm.
Like how long do these like new toys last? Like bones for dogs, you know.
It depends on the dog. And, you know, it's kind of like kids. If you have a stash of toys that you can kind of rotate through.
Yeah.
For instance, we have these great puzzle toys that are more interactive for the – and actually my cats will use them too because you hide treats in them and they have to open doors or spin it around or flip over something that's hiding a treat under it. So interactive toys like that are really cool. There are toys that act as treat dispensers where they have to bat the ball or roll something so that the treats will fall out. And unfortunately, a lot of those treat dispensers are made to dispense dry kibble. But
yeah,
we have really small healthy treats that are made of like coconut and apple or dried dehydrated meats, that sort of thing. So we have different treats that we use for them. But even for the cats, we have boxes where they reach in with their paws to bat balls around or bat at feathers. Cats are really happy with a cardboard box, so next time you get an Amazon delivery, just give them a box. They're really happy with that. it is nice to have. Like, I went to our warehouse today. We got a whole bunch of new products in, so I went over today and picked up a whole bunch of different new treats for our dogs to try out. And
uh-huh.
You know, we only hand out treats a couple times a day, but it's nice to have something different. Plus, they get to be the testers to see if we like new products, so they're pretty happy with that job.
So, yeah, they get the pets. Yeah, that's great. And I wanted to ask you one last question about a comfy bed, you say, is crucial. How do you determine if a bed is working for your pet?
Well, I'm sitting here looking at a dog sacked out on one right now. It's basically if they're using it. Actually, the ones that we have right now, the dogs and cats both love. So that's been a nice bonus. But you have to look at so we had this Cocker Spaniel, little Freckles. She was one of our old cold dogs. She wore a sweater in July. But she liked a bed with a bolster. So she always wanted to have her head up on the bolster. Although there were times when she would put her butt on the bolster and hang her head down, so no. But she always liked to be on an angle. So it kind of depends on the dog. And certainly, if you want to spend a ton of money, they make Tempur-Pedic ones now. They make the waffle bed ones for the senior support dogs. There are a lot of orthopedic beds. You can get warming beds. You can get cooling beds. This time of year, the cooling mat beds are very, very popular for these dogs in the hot climates. So it just depends. Some of them, like the kitty cats, a lot of times will like, and a lot of the small dogs like the little cups where they can kind of burrow down in the middle, or a beanbag type where they can burrow down in and feel really secure and hemmed in. So sometimes you have to experiment with it a little bit to see what your pet likes. But watch where they're sleeping around the house and what kind of space they're looking for. If they like to be back in like a little cave type thing, like if they're always hiding under something, they might be happier in a bed that kind of snuggles around them. We have these things called pet caves or cat caves on our website, which are Himalayan. They're made in the Himalayas, but they're New Zealand wool, and they're felting, basically. But it's a little cave for the cats to go hide in, and even the small dogs like those to go hide in.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's really neat to hear. I don't necessarily have any questions for you remaining. It doesn't seem like anyone else does, too. So would you like to just... say something to summarize.
I guess my summary is that we are doing better. We can do better. We need to really look at the health of our pets from the angle of how do we keep them healthier longer. And the way to do that is good diet. Reduce the chemicals, reduce the vaccines, really minimize them. They really don't need them very often. As a matter of fact, most of their puppy and kitten shots will last them a lifetime. So this annual thing is not recommended. There's a ton of information on my website, drjudymorgan.com. And my Facebook page is Judy Morgan DVM. We do a live show almost every morning during the week. Tons of information, and we answer a lot of emails with questions from people. And my books are really, really informative, packed with tons of information, but my blogs have a ton of information. And if you have a question about a specific disease or problem that you're having with your pet, my best recommendation would be to put in your internet search, Dr. Judy Morgan, and then whatever the topic is, heart disease, kidney disease, see what comes up. You'll probably find a few videos or a few blogs or a few articles that I've written on just about everything.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. It was great talking to you. And our neighbors just got in with the very loud music. So good running out. But I thank you very much for talking to me. And again, I encourage everyone to go to your website, and thank you very much for being here tonight, Judy. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. All right. Thank you.
Good night.
Bye-bye.